Absolutely. Hi, everybody. This is Dean Haglund, high atop the Eastern Columbia Art Deco Wonder in the middle of the historic core of Los Angeles, California. And this is your Chilpack Hollywood Hour. I'm sitting here, of course, beside my co-host, Mr. Phil Larness, ladies and gentlemen.
We are poolside up here.
We are
the,
poolside.
Art Deco masterpiece that is Rational Exuberance Productions. And right across the street, downstairs at the Orpheum, auditions ongoing for So You Think You Can Dance.
Which came on the heels of So America's Got Talent. And they started lining up at midnight and screaming their damn fools' heads off for the 4 a.m. news crews that would stand outside my window going, hey, let's get a reaction shot. Are you guys excited? Scream!
Thank God I did not get that assignment.
Oh, my God.
Oh, things change so much, right, in a week. A week ago, we were complaining about how our entire website, chillpackhollywood.com, where you can find this very podcast, how it had been tsunamied by the good folks at Far Point Media.
Too soon.
And now a week later, literally a whole country has almost been wiped off the map. There's been earthquakes, tsunamis, fires.
Volcanoes.
Nuclear meltdowns. Volcanoes. And
volcano?
Japan.
Of course,
They got hit again.
Yeah, today.
What?
Yep. So here on your Chillpack Hollywood Hour, to address all these issues and many, many more, we have a special guest.
A special guest that we brought
because
in.
Because what better in the face of catastrophe and human tragedy and suffering and the resiliency of the human spirit to overcome it all, what better than to talk about the latest show business news? And here to help us do that
is Charlie Sheen. Thanks, guys. Winning. Great to be here on the roof of the Eastern.
A very good friend and a fan of your Chillpack Hollywood Hour, Mr. Christopher Jacobs.
Thanks for joining
us on the roof today.
I don't hear the applause.
Yay!
Oh, there it is.
Yay!
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Oh, I thought you meant that you get so focused that you ignore the crowd noise altogether.
Both. It was a combination of my being so focused I couldn't hear it and
there
actually
being none.
Yes. So it was easy to focus.
That's how we balance it out. That's
now,
fantastic.
Chris,
for those who don't know, for our fans, Chris...
Let's talk about the newest gig. I guess we'll slowly roll my resume out.
I'm going to make your resume my bitch today.
But, well, you know, I mean, my career really started very close to here at the Bonaventure Hotel with my screen debut in Nick of Time. And my very first frames of celluloid were with Christopher Walken and Johnny Depp.
On a Facebook photo.
Yep.
Where you had claimed recently to be meeting Johnny Depp. And I was so quick on that. If memory serves, you've met Johnny Depp before.
Well, I didn't say meeting. I said interviewing. And, biggest mistake of that day was not remembering to say, hey, we've both come a long way since Nick of Time. One of us a little bit further than the other, but still a long way.
What was Nick of Time? I don't
even think exactly. Dean.
A thriller that unfolded in real time. It unfolded in real time. Beat the clock, political assassination.
Right. Yep.
Wow. So, Chris, again, things change so fast in a week.
Yes.
When we booked Chris on the show, he was a co-host of the television magazine show The Insider.
Correct.
Yeah.
Now, literally a week later... And you're no longer the co-host of TV's
The Insider. I've been hit by my own tsunami.
Your own tsunami
of
fame?
Too soon.
And
I am now, essentially Kevin Frazier, who was the correspondent on Entertainment Tonight, and I swapped jobs. He's now co-hosting The Insider, and I am the new correspondent of Entertainment Tonight.
Was that part of a reality show? I mean, did you also, swap wives or
it should have been, right? I mean, about another missed opportunity, which I think is going to become the theme of this chill pack.
Missed opportunities.
It was a missed opportunity to do a reality show there. Hanging with the Frage, I think, would be a good
name for it. You're a correspondent for Entertainment Tonight. Unless I'm mistaken, you just got back from Nashville?
Atlanta. Where I popped my E.T. cherry by interviewing the voluptuous and lovely Dolly Parton.
Wow.
And the equally voluptuous.
And the equally and voluptuous and luscious Queen Latifah.
Right.
At Dolly World?
There's a threesome
for
you.
No, in Atlanta, where they're shooting a movie.
Yeah, they're shooting a movie called Joyful Noise. And it's actually Dolly's return to the big screen since she did Straight Talk 19 years ago.
Wow.
Obvious joke here is that you interviewed Dolly Parton in Atlanta and then came to the Eastern Columbia to interview even bigger boobs.
You're interviewing me. But it almost worked.
Well, thus proving, though, the punchline.
I joined
Dolly Parton, though, don't they?
And myself included. I was absolutely just taken with her. I joined a very small group of people to whom Dolly Parton personally sang for while looking into their eyes. I mean, I literally halfway fell in love. Like,
was this
crazy.
A therapy session?
It was group.
That's a group thing.
Because it was the lighting guy and the camera guy and the sound guy.
Like,
so
who else
impromptu
would there be?
Group.
I mean, yeah. Other than like maybe private birthday parties of her loved ones or
right.
whatever. I mean, it's like you and Johnny Carson.
That's
or something
why I
like
say
that.
Maybe Chris Christopherson is in there. You know, possibly.
Wow.
Yeah.
But seriously, I mean, I am. You know, I guess I'm as big a fan of Dolly Parton as the next person, unless the next person is a fan of Dolly Parton.
Right.
Because I just, you know, but certainly she's talented, and of course, you know.
Longevity?
You know, there was never a time that I was not aware of Dolly Parton. She's been a star forever.
Sure. And what other singer can you name that has her own theme park?
Dolly World.
Exactly.
I was there when they were building that.
But it really, you know, this maybe gets bandied about too much, but I mean, she honestly is like a national treasure.
Yeah,
I mean, people
really is.
Adore
yeah.
her.
Yeah.
So to pay her back for singing to me, I busted out my karaoke version of I Will Always Love You, which didn't go over quite so well, but she appreciated the effort.
Yeah. Wow, that takes balls to sing to Dolly.
Yeah, you know, especially, and I just picked it up right in the climax of the song.
Oh, wow.
And it just, you know, a couple of the lights shattered.
Wow. Did they get that? Is that going to be on Entertainment
TV? That will be on the bonus DVD.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Can't wait to see that. Now, is this high pressure, this gig? Is this, like, how does that show work?
I mean, no, it's not. You know what? I mean, I started out as an actor, and after about 8 years of doing it, I realized I wasn't a very good actor. that there was a lot of guys in my category who looked like me and sounded like me who were as good or better actors.
Right.
And then I did a show starting in 2003 called Overhauling.
Oh, yeah.
And they hired me as an actor to play all the pranks on the show, and then kind of in addition to, I was hosting the show.
Right.
And through that hosting, I realized that, hey, you know, I have a certain skill at hosting, reading the prompter, doing impromptu stand-ups. So that kind of segued me into the hosting world. I had about a year and a half off between Overhauling and The Insider, where I kind of made a living doing car show appearances and things like that because, you know, Overhauling is a hugely popular show in a very small niche.
Right.
So that kind of sustained me until about a year and a half ago I got the job on The Insider, and now once again I seem to have moved up a rung up the ladder to Entertainment Tonight.
Proof, though, I think that there is a real performance element.
Yeah.
Perhaps not acting, but a real performance element to hosting.
Well, there's a skill involved for sure.
But you know, beyond what all of us would be aware of, when we are watching a good host or someone we don't think is doing a good hosting job, and certain skills emerge, but I think there is a performance that borders on acting that isn't necessarily appreciated, and your roles on Overhauling and The Insider kind of reflect it because yes, you're playing Chris Jacobs, but it's really just that. You're playing Chris Jacobs, and it's two very different Chris Jacobs we're seeing from The Insider versus Overhaul.
And playing is the operative word because, you know, I like to tell people I'm still an actor because when you see me hosting The Insider or now doing correspondent work on Entertainment Tonight, that's not really me.
Right.
You know, this is me sitting here chilling with you guys. But that's me going, you know, and Charlie Sheen news, he's just blown up the world and no one's going to notice for another month. You know, you put on a voice and you have a certain cadence and it's like either refereeing or comedy. You know, you don't really notice it when they're doing a good job because it's expected, but you really notice it when they're doing a bad job.
Right.
You know, hosting is the same. Yeah,
he's doing that.
Now, I mean, I've got to say though, he said that within a certain niche, Overhauling was popular, and that might be true in this country. But my first experience with Overhauling was incredible because I'd known that Chris. It was on TLC
originally,
and I don't think I had that channel, and so I never saw it until I traveled 20 hours one day to get to a location shoot in Camboriú, 7 hours south of Sao Paulo in Brazil. I've been traveling for more than 20 hours, haven't showered in probably 40 hours, check into the hotel room. I'm too tired to go to sleep, too tired to do anything except turn on a TV. And, of course, it's Brazil, so it's in Portuguese.
Of course.
And I turn it on, and I go, oh, this looks interesting. And it's just a show about, you know, cars. And I go, boy, this guy's really good. I don't understand a word he's saying, but he's really good. And he seems so familiar to me. I don't know why. I've never watched Portuguese language television before. Our translator comes into the room and goes, oh, my God, it's Overhauling. This is the most popular show in the country. And sits down, and because they're so car crazy in Brazil.
Well, let me tell you about Brazil, too. First of all, I love the fact that there's a guy out there that whose job it is to translate what I'm saying on Overhauling into Portuguese.
And he's always going to be your voice.
Right, like, exactly.
Is he now translating Fraser's voice?
He does, yeah, when in Insider Brazil.
No, he must have followed you to entertainment.
Well, here's the thing. I am my next travel assignment is to Rio de Janeiro. For the premiere of the animated film Rio, which opens in a couple weeks. So on April 8th, I'm going to actually be in Rio. And here's the scary part. Apparently, we're such huge stars in Brazil that when my co-star on the show, Chip Foos, went down there, they actually had to get the presidential SWAT team to protect him.
Are you kidding?
Because they were scared he was going to get kidnapped.
It was huge. The show was huge down there.
So do you get a SWAT team?
I'll probably get like local police.
But I can't.
So I'm slightly less of a star. Yeah, I mean, there's got to be some residual effect, right?
That is so cool. So are you doing anything other than the premiere, like a car show?
No. But
you're going now for the new gig, right? For
I'm going for Entertainment Tonight. But I'm totally going to hedge my bets. I'm going to bring an Overhauling hat and a T-shirt. You know, just to like put it in people's faces, just like, yep, it's me. Just to see what the reaction is going to be. Because when Chip came back from Brazil, he said, It's like being in Led Zeppelin, you know, in the 70s, walking down Sunset Boulevard. I mean, in the car world, he is Elvis. Yeah. And I guess I'm like, you know, what was his manager?
Colonel.
The Colonel. I'm the Colonel. Yeah.
The Colonel. Get me a sandwich, Colonel.
Now, I want to talk a little bit about, you know, the job you just came off of, the Insider, because we did chat about a week ago, and it was really interesting, some of the things you were saying. But first, were you relieved, given the events in Japan of the last week, to not have to go into the Insider every day and be reading copy about entertainment stories?
Well, first of all, I was already on Entertainment Tonight when the earthquake and tsunami hit. So, and I would never want anyone to think that I was relieved in any capacity about, you know, that tragic of an event kind of changing people's focus from the BS that we deal with at the Insider and ET. But I haven't really experienced. I mean, we're talking about it on Entertainment Tonight. I mean, we're talking about, you know, the earthquake and the tsunami and the effects of that. Yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean, we do have a little heart. Maybe just a little.
Because I just think it's got to be hard. I mean, look, we debate back and forth, like, over the nature of art and the importance of art in the wake of truly earth-shattering events. And, you know, I'm generally of the position that it's events like this that actually give art and entertainment their importance, because they are the sort of things that remind us, but also remind us of some of the nourishing truths of being human, because it's very easy to go down the rabbit hole of the tragedy.
Right.
And sometimes you need to be reminded, oh, yeah, these are the things that make living fun and worth it. And at the same time, though, so much of the story and the conversation and the cacophony around the creation of entertainment, I find, becomes sort of meaningless at that point. Like, who cares what the box office returns were?
Or, you know, especially we just got through award season. I mean, if that's not the biggest emblem of, you know, excess. And I mean, when you're congratulating yourself, you know, you really need to over and over again.
That's the thing.
You need to really examine.
It was fine when it was just the Oscars, but then they realized that was a marketing tool.
There's literally I think 10 different award shows.
You were literally exhausted. You felt exhausted after, by the time the Oscars were over. It had been, I mean, it was like you were an accountant during tax season.
Pretty much
is the only thing I can compare it to. Yeah. Oh, it was like you're
looking
busy
at the same. statement every 2 weeks. You know, yeah. I mean, it's like, what do you ask this person that you just had an interview with 2 weeks ago about the same thing? You know, it's like, how do you feel becomes your go-to, you know? Right. It's like, must feel great to be here. And then you stick your microphone. It's like, okay, pressure's off.
Yeah, exactly.
I got my question out. Now you go. And they're thinking the same thing. Like, how do I come up with something witty to say after being asked? And you know, I look down the line, and, you know, in addition to Insider and Entertainment Tonight, there's 15 other outlets that have just all asked a different variation of the same exact question. I mean, it's got to be exhausting for the celebrity, too.
Oh, yeah. I would. Oh.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine how you even prep for that. Like, what do you, like, go over, okay, here's the stars that are going to be coming down the red carpet. I'm going to ask this guy this thing. And that.
Well, no, I don't get that specific. What I make sure to do is two things. One, to see all the movies that have been nominated so I know what I'm talking about when I ask the person the question. And two, and this is most important for any of you future hosts out there, never, ever, first of all, ask a question that you don't know the answer to, because that's always dangerous, but never use a name. Because the one time you use a name, you're going to get that name wrong, and you're going to feel like an absolute idiot. So just even if it's Robert De Niro walking up to me, I'm not going to use his name just in case I say Robert Duvall, you know? Because
right.
That's just like, it just shatters everything from that point on. Yeah.
So what do you just, hey, sir?
Well, they obviously know walking up that you know who they are. You just launch right into it. Hey, congratulations on your nomination. How does it feel?
All right. And then just go from
see,
there.
I just went into autopilot. Yeah,
that was nice.
I haven't got the voice going and everything.
I got my own microphone right here, Chris. I don't know if you noticed.
You got what?
I got my own microphone.
Oh, that's right. I don't have to do that. See, but it's like, it's, you know, it's involuntary for me to ask a question.
Wow.
And then the microphone goes away.
Did that take a while to learn? Like, for the kids out there who want to be hosts, that back.
Well, you know, there is a certain proper distance for, you know, you don't want to overmodulate. You don't want to get it too close to yourself, first of all, or right. to them. So they're, you know, it's all hosting, like you said, Phil. It's an art form.
Well, hey. do you remember on the old late night with David Letterman back when he was on NBC?
Oh, yeah.
Larry Bud Melman.
Yes.
The phony sponsor. And yes. They would send him out. And I remember one time in particular, they sent him to the bus depot to welcome visitors to New York with a hot towel, and he could not figure out that microphone.
That's
the
right.
switch from himself.
Yeah.
So he would literally do something like this, and he would keep talking.
Right.
And then he would stop, and it was back.
Or, even worse, he would ask the question while the microphone was pointed at them, and then bring
it back
to himself as
they
answered. Yeah.
Hilarious.
Yeah.
Now, I know hosting's hard because I, of course, host at the 7-hour Ghost Adventures live at the Trans-Allegheny
Ooh,
Lunatic
and live
Center.
is completely different ball wax.
A live ghost hunt where nothing happens for 7 hours from 8 p.m. till 3 a.m.
I thought that was Geraldo's territory.
Oh, it might as well have been because it did.
We all remember opening Al Capone's vault, right?
Oh,
there was
man.
Nothing in it.
And this was the same thing. It was like, and I just suddenly realized how much hosting is. I doff my hat to everybody who hosts these things, and particularly live, and particularly live for 7 hours without. And all they had on craft service table was peanuts and some grapes.
Nice.
So you couldn't even like sugar up.
Not even a Triscuit anywhere.
Not a Triscuit. I could have loved a Triscuit just to energize me for hours.
And sugar is usually the staple of the crafty table.
There was no sugar. They didn't. I don't know what the hell.
That's
they
amazing.
Doing. They blew all their money on a satellite truck.
Well, and your salary.
No, that I gave it to charity.
So
I don't know why
what
I
is it
that.
Like to be on the red carpet on that side of things? In terms of your, you know, we see the lights on all the stars when they're going down, but there is this extraordinary crush of people with cameras and microphones and all of this. What is the relationship like with the other people? Because you must be seeing the same people at each of these events.
We are, and usually the producers of the event will line us up in the same order. I mean, inevitably,
oh, really?
I'm next to, you know, Access Hollywood or Extra.
Is it done by height?
Done by ratings?
It's done from knee to ankle. They take a very precise measurement.
Wow, the fibula.
Because that's really where you get your height from.
I can't believe it.
Yes, the fibula. and sometimes the femur.
If
the fibula ties, then they go to the femur for the tiebreaker.
We got a fibula tiebreaker.
You know, well, first of all, I mean, being on... I told my agent when I got into hosting and I was on Overhaul and I got a hosting agent and I told them, they said, you know, we sat down for the meeting and they're like, okay, well, tell us where you want to be 5 years from now. And I said, well, the one thing I don't want to do is entertainment news.
perfect.
I don't want to be the guy on the red carpet going, what are you wearing? In fact, and when I got the insider job, I go, I vowed to myself, the one thing I will never ask anybody is, what are you wearing? Now, that lasted about, you know, a month. Because, you know, that's
Dean,
just like...
Dean loves this because, like, what was it, 3 months ago, I'm saying, there's something you can rest assured I'll never direct. Anything that has to do with serial killers, zombies, or vampires. Next month, I'm shooting a vampire thing.
That's right.
Well, they're very vogue right now. Yeah. They walk among us.
They do.
But yeah, what it is it's, first of all, it's very humiliating to be on that side of the velvet rope because, you know, growing up and dreaming of being an actor and a celebrity, I always wanted to be the person
on that
being
side.
Interviewed.
Yeah, right.
You know, so, but, you know, I got over that very quickly and. And the relationship that you have with your colleagues from other outlets is it's more it's love hate it's more love than hate but it's love hate because you're all trying to get that quote unquote scoop
right
you know, which causes some people to ask questions that are just completely inappropriate and unnecessary.
What are you wearing?
And pissing off the publicists, which is the hugest no-no in hosting.
Oh,
you know, because I mean, they not only represent the client you're asking this stupid question of, they also represent a host of other clients who now you are cut off from,
right?
Because you're in
Don't
their
go to that
in their black book, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's you know there's a lot of love too. I mean, you really feel a sense of camaraderie when a celebrity will blow off the entire press line. You know, it's like, well, what are we doing here then? You know, don't you need us? It goes again back to the humility of it. I enjoy it. I mean, I like asking questions. I like interviewing people, and I have a style where I have more of a conversation versus like a question and answer. So
yeah,
I try to interject some comedy, some camaraderie with the person that I'm interviewing. But with people who are on the same side of the rope as I am, it's, you know, it's camaraderie.
Yeah.
Do you think, you know, in terms of that, creating that camaraderie, do you think your acting background helps you in that? Because you certainly have a very visceral knowledge
with my fellow media people.
I was thinking in your interviews and creating camaraderie
with them.
Yeah,
I mean, and again, going back to what I said before, I'm still acting,
really?
You know, I'm still playing a part. My lines may not be scripted, you know, verbatim, but they're scripted to a certain extent. You know, I mean, there's certain questions that you have to ask based on where you are and who you're talking to.
And
so
I would think it does help. I would think that knowing, you know, to a degree, their process so well has to help you, you know, in terms of.
Yeah. And the truth is, you know, They look at these types of events, red carpets in particular, with the same disdain that people on my side probably do. It's very uncomfortable. I mean, I'm sure they don't like this endless line of the same question and you know, people kissing their asses falsely in most cases, you know? I mean, I'm sure that they don't like it either. They do it. It's their job, just like we're doing our job. So it does help because you just have to, you know, become that person who's that role. I'm playing the role of interviewer, and you're playing the role of interviewee, and we both understand what's going on. And
well, so
if you can get a little inside joke in there with them, it loosens them up a little bit, which is why I try to make it more of a conversation than a question and answer session.
Well, that said, then, you know, you said when you were younger, you know, you always wanted to be the person on that side of the rope. Now, would you want that?
Oh, of course. You know, I mean, I aspire to greater things too. I love doing entertainment news, but hopefully I'm going to move on to even bigger things where I'll be hosting my own show one day. I would love to do a game show. I would love to do a late night talk show, and therefore
but
I would cross over to
that
other side.
Heard around the world,
perhaps.
If you can,
it is
if someday
the
world you can
wide
get
web after all.
You can get after all, with this got to set up.
But would being on that side of the rope, being the person walking the red carpet, would that be to you part of it that was fun or part of it that's part of the job?
Well, I have done that in the past. You know, I mean, I have walked a few red carpets as an actor, as a celebrity. Nick of Time was huge for me. It's as I said, it's just as big of a burden for the person walking the red carpet as it is for the people who are asking the questions, you know, because you're exposed, you know, all the cameras are pointed at you. That's a burden as well. So, you know, I mean, every single move you make, and you know that people are snapping away and you get caught in a weird pose where it looks like you're picking your nose or something, and it's going to be all over the world.
I would also think that if you're having a bad day at all, and you know, with literally you and all your colleagues within that field there present right then, if a star, if a celebrity is having a bad day, that will just concretize a reputation so fast. Yeah, because absolutely. Everyone's there.
That will, having a bad day will get halfway around the world while having a normal day is putting its shoes on. It just travels that much faster. And here's the thing, for people in the entertainment industry, no matter what capacity you're in, behind the scenes, above the line, below the line, in front of the camera, behind the camera, you're not allowed to have a bad day. Yeah. Because essentially, it's a people business.
Right.
And all you have is your reputation. And going back to that same point, if you have that bad day and freak out on someone, that's all people are going to remember. They're not going to go, oh, he's such a nice guy anymore. They're going to go, oh, man, I was working with him one time, and he literally lost his shit.
Yeah, and as like a professional.
99 good days and one bad day, people are going to focus on that bad day.
And as a professional performer, that is as much a part of the job.
Absolutely.
As saying your lines when the camera's rolling.
And there's that old adage, too, you know, be nice to the people on your way up because you're going to see the same people on the way down. Yeah. When I ever meet anybody, from the lowest person on the totem pole to the executive producer, at any point in your career future, any one of those people could be in the position to give you a job.
Right.
So if you're going to be nice to them, even when you're having a bad day or they're having a bad day, they may remember that in the future. And work begets work.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
Usually we hate to deal strictly in the positive, but we're not going to ask you to dish.
Just this once.
We're not going to ask you to dish dirt.
Okay.
The other side, was there anyone during this long campaign of award season, was there anyone or multiple people that surprised you with you know, maybe how genuine or how
delightful.
Easygoing or delightful they were as interview subjects in that
when you heard
circumstance,
they were bastards
or surprised you in some way?
Following in the mindset that, you know, it's part of the job to, you know, do the press, essentially, I always expect people to be nice because they're actors after all. So, you know, act nice. You know what I mean?
Right.
Pretend.
That's yeah.
That's what you do for a living.
Yeah.
So no one ever surprises me with how nice they are. There are a few that go above and beyond. I mean, you know, Johnny Depp, for instance. I mean, we kind of know each other through some connections that we have. And I'm always surprised that he remembers me right off the bat. Because, you know, a guy like that, he meets 100,000 ass kissers a day. You know?
For him
to remember my name and ask me about, you know, my personal life, it's really flattering that someone of that magnitude.
Is he still upset about how we used to deface that table at the Viper Room?
He is no longer upset about that. He finally got over it. Even after he sold the place, he was still upset. He finally got over it.
We did. We spent some time at the Viper Room.
We did. Yeah.
Had good times back then.
Table.
No, we didn't. No. In fact, there was a sign on the table. This table belongs to so-and-so. Do not fuck with it.
Exactly.
It actually said that.
Which scared us straight.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
But yeah, I mean, there's good, bad, and middle of the road, you know. But but generally speaking, I'm always in the position where I come face-to-face with the celebrities where they are on their best behavior. You know, I rarely run into people just, like, out and about, you know. So they know the game like I know the game. And greetings, salutations, big smiles all around, even though neither one of us may be feeling that particular way.
Now, the first experience I had with you on The Insider, and again, I hadn't caught up with you in some time. I didn't know that you were on it, and I think this was shortly after you went on the show. But I'd gotten back from a long shoot with you, Dean. We'd been traveling around shooting our documentary, and everybody, remember when we were in Canada and people, you would ask in your improv shows, name someone in the news, and people would say Tiger Woods. But we hadn't really caught up to the story yet.
Yeah, right.
So when we got back to the States, I turn on TV and going, okay, there's got to be one of these entertainment news shows that'll tell me what's going on with Tiger Woods. And there's Chris Jacobs staring back at me telling me what's going
what
on with Tiger Woods.
What percentage of times
Woods.
When you turn on the television am I
Is it
on?
You?
Yeah.
I've turned on the TV, I think, three times in my life, and twice.
And so it was 66.6%.
No, because the third time it was Via Negativa, an episode of The X-Files,
so
where you
of the time,
played an ER doctor.
When you turn on the television, it's me who you see.
That's right.
That's some
fact,
spooky
that's
kismet
here.
Right there.
Yeah. But I don't want to let you know about my very particular TiVo instructions.
only Chris Jacobs.
Right.
In parentheses.
Hunky, comma, hosting, comma.
What are the tags?
Those are the tags. That's it.
So,
is there cheese in there anywhere?
So was that not like one of your first big things when you were hosting? Like you had to make sense of the
Tiger
Woods
thing. Well,
that
happened. Yeah, you know, it was pretty close in time. I started with The Insider in September, and that happened in November. So that was pretty close in time. I mean, that was the first like major story. They sent me to Florida so I could sit in a conference room and watch Tiger Woods, his, you know, apology speech or whatever
speech,
it was.
Which
I
I've
was
only
like,
seen the South Park
can't I be doing this at home? You know, why did I just come 3,000 miles to sit in a conference room? But yeah, I think that was. And, you know, of course, I'm a golfer. I'm a golf fanatic.
Right.
And Tiger Woods was my golfing hero at the time. And it's just really, really sad to see how far he's fallen.
Right, and also that it ruined his golf game.
It really did.
That's really bizarre. That tells, you know, I always say this for professional golfers. They all kind of play the same physical game, but it's a mental game once you get
absolutely
up there.
Absolutely is a mental
game. And once you're in that situation, your game is kind of shot for
and
some
he
time.
Got his, he got his bell rung big time, and it rattled him, and he's still rattled. I don't know if he'll ever recover.
And
well, that's a tough call.
You know, you mentioned, I mean, he was your golfing hero. I mean, is there a part of you, and you have just said that, you know, like, professional decorum is a part of the job, but is there a part of you that wishes we didn't quite care so much about, you know, what's
things
going
like
on
that.
In
things
Tiger
like
Woods'
that.
Life? Yeah, I mean,
well, no, I can't say that because that's, you know, not only my profession, but I care. I can't pretend that I don't care. I would like to not care,
right.
But I do care. You know what I mean? So I can't say I wish that people didn't care so much because it's just, that's like saying, you know, I wish the sky was
no, but I was just
pink.
Wondering, as a fan of his, like, if there was that moment of, you know, hey, you know, it's great not to know, and really his only job is go out there and perform.
No,
because
kinda,
that's what brings
like
us joy.
Know. I like to peek behind the curtain. I like the underbelly of things. And,
but then now have we gone too far with TMZ? I mean, this is what I always think about the red carpet is why do we even need that now?
Right.
When I'm on everybody's tweet follow.
Yeah.
I'm on.
Well, you still need the pomp and circumstance. You know, you still need the
do
ceremony.
I?
You,
yeah.
You, I mean, you really do because that's just it's what the industry hangs its hat on. It's the proper way to do it. The TMZs and the radars and you know everything else. That's kind of like, again, that's the
and
that's
people
the
do
CD
hunger
underbelly.
For ritual. People
and
do
go,
hunger
I mean,
for
you
ceremony.
Know, go
I
back
mean,
to the rag pages in the 40s. You know, Hush Hush magazine. That's
right.
Then that. That was then what TMZ is now. It's just add Hush Hush and technology, and you have TMZ.
I know, but now it's also like those same Home Depot day laborers have video cameras.
Yep.
And they're hunting them.
Everybody's a paparazzi. Can you imagine what it's going to be like in 10 years?
No. I can imagine we all have the little earpiece, the cell phone, iPhone that's continually streaming.
I actually have an advanced technology component, and I'm actually filming you guys right now.
Exactly. That's my point.
And it's not only am I filming it, it's streaming.
It's streaming as
and not only is it streaming, but I'm singing into your eyes.
That's right. Auto-tune.
I'm actually giving you the thoughts as to what to say. I'm actually not here right now.
That's fantastic.
You know, every time I turn on my TV and you're staring back at me, I've felt that that was the
That's
case.
That's actually me in there.
Obey.
Inside the TV.
Obey.
We're off on a tangent here, but your point is well taken, Dean, that in this day and age of instant information and so many outlets only looking for the dirt.
Yeah.
You know, what really have we become as a society when that's the only thing we're interested in?
And, you know, a private guy like me, it's sort of like, well, I just like being an artist and an actor. I don't really, really crave that red carpet thing that much. And, in fact, you know, any more famous than I am, I would find it very irritating being chased by 35 guys in a camera.
And the truth is, you know, 99.9% of celebrities are like yourself where they fly way under the radar. You know, I mean, really, you could name the biggest news stories on one hand. You know, you've got Lindsay Lohan, Britney Spears, Tiger Woods, Charlie Sheen, and, you know, whoever else.
Well, we were talking about this last week, that what looked like it was about to be a huge news story, a 26-page article in The New Yorker with Paul Haggis outing Scientology.
Right.
Yeah, that was huge.
And it was huge for all of an hour and a half.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's as I pointed out last week, I think it's only partially that, you know, Charlie Sheen news supplanted it because, again, lowest common denominator, it's a sideshow, it's a circuit, all those things that go into it, but also because of the way the news now spreads in terms of delivery. To really understand the news of the Paul Haggis story, one had to read The New Yorker.
Right.
To follow the news of the Charlie Sheen story, one needs to read tweets.
Right.
And that's how we get our news.
And read a website. And at the risk of being put on some sort of list, don't underestimate the power of Scientology to squash that story.
Right. Well, right. Well, I actually said that you know, if Charlie Sheen was a Scientologist, would it surprise any of us?
Right. No.
You know, because it was such a wonderful. But yeah. But at the same time, when a 26-page article does get published in the New Yorker,
yep.
it's hard to argue that it's being squashed.
Right.
Right. At the same time, it's not followed up
publicly.
Well, here's the thing, and it is probably, you know, this will put it into context. We spoke about that story on The Insider for a week, every day for a week, while, you know, it was all breaking. We spoke about it, you know, kind of looking into the church. We talked about Tom Cruise. We talked about Travolta, all the, you know, the high-profile Scientologists. And come that next Monday, that was it. It was over.
Right.
All these Charlie other Sheen. Big stories have legs, right, you know, whether something's happening or not. But I made a mental note of that. I said, huh, that story lasted exactly 5 news days and then is gone. There's no right. residual at all.
Right. Right. And that's why you didn't count it off as one of the top news stories.
Right.
I mean, that's now because
it really wasn't.
Yeah. With 5 days doesn't count anymore.
Charlie Sheen.
And there wasn't enough scandal.
Well, that's the thing.
You know?
It's just like,
I mean, if there had been some sex or murder or something involved right. in that story.
They could have just killed
yeah,
somebody.
All it was like, you know, slave labor.
Yeah.
It wasn't enough.
I get slave labor all the time.
But also, right.
Slave labor is not sexy.
No,
but also,
no.
Chris Jacobs, correspondent
Very
for Entertainment
sexy.
Tonight. Had never guest starred on a Paul Haggis sitcom, but he had on 2.5 Men.
Yes, I had.
Oh, you did.
And then, you know, and Charlie Sheen and I are buddies ever right. since then. So I have kind of an inside track to Charlie.
Awesome.
And yeah, and
was it as crazy as Charlie Sheen said? I'm supporting Charlie Sheen on this one. I know.
Yeah, no. Yeah, I mean, the guy, after all, he's an actor and he's a media manipulator and he knows what rates and what doesn't rate, and he understands that there's no such thing as bad publicity. And I to a certain extent believe that he's Svengali-ing this whole thing. You know,
right.
he's not that crazy.
Right.
He's not.
And at the same time, from every account that I've heard from people working on the show, you know what? It was a miserable work experience for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And we know this just in everyday life, never mind show business, but the bigger people's reaction to anything, the older the material that they're dealing with.
Yeah.
And so what do you see on the part of Chuck Lorre? What do you see on the part of Charlie Sheen? You're seeing huge reactions. So what we know is whatever really is going on between all of them has been going on a long time.
Yeah, and it's not just a cliche when you say familiarity breeds contempt. It really does.
Oh yeah.
You know, when you spend day after day with the same people, you know, as much as you love them, you're going to find things about them that completely irritate you, and it seems like it just boiled over. I mean, it's amazingly interesting also, and by the fact that we're talking about it every single day, and so is everybody else.
Yeah.
A lot of people think this way. That dysfunction is so interesting because here's this kind of fairy tale situation. He's making more money than anybody else on television. That show does bigger ratings than anybody else on
even
a network
reruns.
That is the number one network.
Yeah.
And yet it falls apart. It crumbles. And everyone goes, wow, why? You know, and they want to know why. And in finding out why, they're interested in all the minutiae. And Charlie's just feeding that fire.
Feeding that
but
fire,
you know what?
Right?
I think you really did, in a way, describe also how no matter what the tragedy is, what the natural catastrophe is, be it the earthquake in Haiti or Katrina, the reaction on the part of viewers, you know, we all know people who just can't tear themselves away from the TV because they are so involved in the minutiae of these horrible details.
Right.
And any news story, what we're seeing, be it the collapse of an entire franchise for CBS, because it's not just about Charlie Sheen and rehab, it is literally how does such a gold mine be allowed to collapse? With the collapse of the infrastructure of Japan,
yeah.
We live in a time where it isn't just one thing goes wrong. When one thing goes wrong, dominoes fall
mm-hmm.
fast.
Yeah.
The good news about that, of course, as we've talked about on the show before, is step aside, stay calm, something new is going to come along pretty
well,
darn soon.
I disagree with you that the franchise is collapsing, because
oh.
if CBS spins this properly, it could get even bigger. I mean, who wouldn't watch the first show with whatever actor replaces Charlie Sheen?
True enough.
People said that about 8 Simple Rules, though, too, and that didn't
well,
last
that,
long.
Well, that wasn't quite the significance of 2.5 Men. It wasn't quite the same structure of that show. It didn't have quite the following.
The only sitcom that I can think of that managed to survive, if not thrive, with a major cast change was Spin City, and that actually involved Charlie Sheen saving it.
Yeah.
So, it's...
Three's Company, maybe?
Well, yeah, and you know, you Furley or Roper?
Yeah, I'm more Furley.
Oh my God. So I'm a Roper guy.
People are either Ropers
I'm
or
a Roper.
See? Yeah.
So, but I really do believe that, and maybe partly out of spite for Charlie Sheen, that they will continue with 2.5 Men, and they'll cast someone in it, total stunt cast, and the ratings will be huge.
For a while, I think it will. But, you know, again, I'm just so aware of how much almost everybody working on that show hates working on that show that I just feel like it's going to blow another gasket
somewhere
else.
Well, there's nothing like getting people back to work than something like this happening, you know, where the people who work on the show are going to want to show up to work on it as much as viewers are going to want to watch it see what's going to happen.
Yeah,
you're right.
True.
Yeah.
Wow.
But I just wait kind of for the next major breakdown involving somebody else.
And you know there's going to be. I mean, you know, look at the fickleness of the American consciousness. No one even cares about Tiger Woods anymore.
Right.
Whereas a year ago at this time, it was the biggest story on the planet. Still, we're in March now. It happened the previous November. And I don't think he might have played a tournament since then a year ago at this time, but it was such a global story. Like he had to go into hiding.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, I mean, this one, Charlie Sheen, there's guys like breaking into his property to pitch him a show idea. You know, it's like this guy drove straight through from Kansas and actually got onto Charlie Sheen's property.
What?
Yeah.
All right. Now you've got to speak of getting onto Charlie Sheen's property. You've got to, fill us in on these cars of his that get stolen. Yes. And crashed.
Well, there was another story that I reported on from, as I dubbed it, Sheen Ravine, where both his Mercedes-Benz V12s, hand-built to order, by the way. They don't just pump these things off the production line. Yeah, these are, you know, $250,000 cars.
And he leaves unlocked and in the driveway.
Yeah.
Of course.
You know, everything's relative. You know, when you're making $1.8 million an episode,
that's right.
$250,000 car is like a Nova to your common person.
Well, I asked you, can he just lock these? And you said you had actually texted him that at one point.
I did. I was like, dude, bring your keys inside. I contemplated getting him a keychain for his birthday.
That's hilarious.
What was his response?
He laughed. He thought that was funny. And I told him, I go, dude, you know, it's not, what are you doing? Especially after the second one went over. I was like, really? Seriously?
That is hilarious.
It happened again?
So but, there's just been two now in the
just two. Yeah,
he could have afforded LoJack.
Right.
He could have a club.
Well, no, they knew where to find the car. They didn't have to look for it.
Well, then a club,
especially a club.
That thing's easy to use.
How hard is that?
That'd be a sweet endorsement for him. Charlie Sheen, the club
protects the Sheen machine.
So now, when your agent asked you what was your 5-year goal. What other than you said I don't want to be doing Entertainment Week? Now you're on Entertainment Weekly.
Yeah,
no, Entertainment Tonight.
Entertainment Tonight.
Didn't say not Entertainment Tonight. Let's
no, I didn't. I just
said Entertainment News.
I just said I didn't want to do Entertainment News, and in particular, asking that question on the red carpet: what are you wearing? Because
you
that
wearing?
Is just the most humiliating thing a straight male can ask somebody.
Right. Exactly.
What are you wearing?
I mean, we have Tim Gunn. That's the only guy we need doing
right.
it.
Right. Exactly.
Done. He's fantastic. Yeah. He's fun to watch.
Well, because I like to ask questions that I actually care. About you know what
imagine
I mean
that.
It doesn't
imagine
always that. Translate to the viewership of our show.
What gym do you go to?
Right. But I you know I it remains my goal. I'd like to have my own show. I'd like to either be doing a game show or a talk show. I want to do kind of like what Pierce is doing, but you know, without the suck.
Wait,
I'd like to do what
My God, I watched Piers Morgan on CNN replaced Larry King. I watched a few minutes of this because I'd been hearing such bad things, and often, you know, compassionate person that I am, I hear these horrible things and I go, oh, come on. The guy's, you know, trying. 5 minutes in, I'm going, is he just doing like a bad imitation of Stephen Fry as Oscar Wilde? I don't understand this performance
right.
art piece.
What's missing though is the talent and the charm.
Yeah,
it doesn't translate for me anyway, personally. I mean, anytime you start out with the attitude that you're actually the best. He actually said this, quote, I am the best interviewer in the world.
What?
He said that. I mean, isn't that something that, you know, by virtue of you saying it, renders it untrue?
That's like saying I'm really good in bed.
Yeah, exactly.
You have to announce that.
No one who actually is has ever said that before.
I don't remember who this celebrity was, but the intro for it, the promo clip of it was, you know, Piers Morgan looking into the camera saying, I ask the questions no one else will ask. Cut to, in the promo, him asking this filmmaker or this star or whatever, would you be up for a sequel to this film?
He asked Condoleezza Rice how he would woo her when he was asking her if she was ever going to get married. He asked he was obsessed with the Kardashian sisters' breasts, trying to find out if they were real. I mean, this is hard-hitting journalism,
and
isn't
questions
it?
No one would ever think to ask.
I wouldn't even think to ask them that question.
Wow.
Because no one cares.
Now, how did he get that? I mean, does he have a hosting agent as well?
Same hosting agent. Same
I mean, you know, he's a big deal in England. And,
he is?
Yeah, you know, he was the editor for the Daily Mirror, I believe, their tabloid over there, the Red Top. And then, you know, he had some success over here judging shows, America's Got Talent. And
Dean, was 5 years ago, Piers Morgan said, I never want to replace Larry King on CNN.
That's right. Because there's nothing that seals your fate more than calling it out.
So, with all apologies to Reverend Michael Beckwith, we've actually revealed the true secret
right.
on this show.
Right.
Which is just put it out to the universe what you really don't want.
Just by the words themselves.
But to get back to your original question, I'd like to do something like, you know, you remember Charlie Rose, what he does.
Of course.
I'd like to do like a younger, hipper version of what Charlie Rose does. Same kind of setting, real simple, two guys at a table just kind of freelance talking.
I enjoyed Tavis Miley a great
He's
deal
really good. Yeah.
And I like Zach with a fern.
Between Two Ferns.
Between Two Ferns.
His Between Two Ferns with Michael Cera is some of the best 3 minutes of comedy you will ever see. And the John Hamm one, too, is sublime. If you don't know it, check out Between Two Ferns with Zach Galifianakis. And his mockumentary that he did as his fictional brother, Seth Galifianakis.
Right.
Check that out. Google Seth Galifianakis and watch the outtakes because they're absolutely hilarious.
I don't think I've seen that one.
Oh, and another thing, if you want to check out as we're plugging people who aren't here and don't deserve it, I'll be in New York this week seeing Book of Mormon, which is the new Broadway show brought to you by the creators of South Park.
Totally.
Wow.
I just heard
it's a
John
musical.
Stewart go nuts.
He said it was so good it made him angry.
It made him angry.
Yeah.
And that if the hit song from that is the only record of us existing on this planet.
That's right. When aliens invade, will be our theme song.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I'm really looking forward to seeing that. Yeah.
Wow.
I thought it was, I saw a play they wrote before they did South Park. That was performed at the Fringe in Edinburgh, and it wasn't spectacularly funny, but it may have been performers doing it. But it had the same thing. It was about the Donner Pass and the Mormons crossing
right.
the mountains.
Yeah,
and
they're obsessed with Mormons.
They are.
Yeah,
they're very obsessed with Mormons. But I think
as is the American public,
in a good way.
Which is we made the Twilight books and movies big hits.
Yep.
So
this is true. I'm looking forward to seeing that. I'm seeing that on Friday.
Awesome. How'd you get tickets? Or
My friend Dario worked it, and I worked it by getting us backstage. I know the manager of one of the leads in it, so we're actually going to get a chance to go backstage after the performance.
Look at you.
Yeah.
And are you going to report about this on the
show?
No,
this is personal time.
Look at that.
Yeah.
So what is your hours then went on the show? I mean, what do you have to do?
Well, they're pretty much all over the place on Entertainment Tonight because being a correspondent, I just go wherever they send me at any time of the day. On The Insider, it was a little bit more structured since I was the co-host. We were in there. I would usually get up between 5 and 5:30, sometimes as early as 4 or 4:30 to be in hair and makeup by 5 or 6 and then on stage at either 6 or 7 depending on when our slot was in the stage. So it was very early, but consequently, I was off by 10:30. I was back home and just responsible for doing voiceovers until 10:30, which I could do from my house. So it was a great schedule.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, for all the kids, listen to me, for all the up-and-comers who are interested in hosting, what's your big suggestions for them?
Practice. You know, as in anything else, practice makes perfect. If you do want to be a host, you have to work on your skills. There is a certain skill with the voice that you use and the delivery and the cadence. What I did before my audition for The Insider was I watched the show, I wrote down everything that the host said, and then I practiced into a mirror.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I mean, it really does help. And if you really want to be a host who reads off a prompter, take a teleprompter class, because that's not easy.
Did you do that?
No, I have a a priori skill of
is that right?
Yeah, of reading the teleprompter. I'm a freak that
reading?
Way.
Yeah. Was that on your resume under special skills back in your acting
days? Well, it just said freak, and then if they wanted me to elaborate, it was on an additional page.
Did
I explained
you have to
read
freak without moving your eyes and all that. Sort
well,
of thing,
you know, not that not so much. I don't know if I do or if I don't, but it's more about saying something while you're reading the next line.
Ah, yeah, that's
so you've
got
to separate your brain from your mouth.
Right.
Which is not easy to do, especially in my past. I would speak before I thought.
Right. I just
now you have to think.
The
and
mouth
speak
having
and
any relationship to
again.
The brain is
yeah.
fantastic.
Yeah. No, it's complete disconnect.
Awesome. Well, I think I could probably do that then. I wasn't doing that at 7 in the morning.
How are we doing on time?
The last 10 minutes. Look at that. What a fun. It's already over almost.
The fun.
Well, I just got to point out where we are. We're on top of the Eastern Department Store building, which is a historic building in downtown L.A., and I have always admired this building from afar, and to be this close to the clock tower, we're on the roof, is just so cool. I've always loved downtown L.A. I've lived in L.A. proper since 95. I've lived in California since 88, and I've really seen L.A. blossom as you have, especially downtown, you know, with L.A. Live going in, and it's just such a pleasure to come down here.
Well, and you know, it's my favorite place to live now because I don't drive anymore. I put less than 3,000 miles on a car ever. So environmental, we're on a community service agriculture box of organic foods delivered here once a week.
Nice.
So I'm the most environmental green I've ever been. And most productive, and I absolutely love living downtown Los Angeles, where you think it'd be sort of high crime and all that sort of thing.
Not at all.
The neighborhood now is, they did the census, it's grown by 50,000 people, and this is the tightest, most neighborhoodly neighborhood. It's like living in Nebraska, only
you,
vertical.
You were an English major, weren't you?
Yeah.
Neighborhoodly neighborhood.
Neighborhoodly neighborhood.
What were you saying about when
your brain disconnects?
You don't
brain.
Notice hosting when it's good, but you do when it's things are going wrong.
We just noticed.
one thing I would like to plug, though, Dean Haglund.
Oh, yes.
You actually, both you know, an architecture student and art historian, as well as an artist yourself, and a lover of film history, you host walking tours of downtown Los Angeles,
don't
you?
I'd like to take one of those.
I have a website that's coming up called laconfidentialtours.com.
Nice.
And that I give a one-hour historical tour, walking tour, no less. When do you ever walk in Los Angeles, except on my tour?
To the car and from the car?
No. We actually walk through downtown, and I show you the 9 historical vaudeville houses that still exist all around here, plus some of the fantastic architectural details, including the world's shortest cable car, the Angel's Flight.
Yep. Absolutely. I've ridden Angel's Flight.
Where movies were filmed, like Blade Runner, Harold Lloyd,
Nick of Time.
Yeah. 500 Days of Summer.
I'm actually, you know, as you are, Dean, I'm a lover of film noir and in particular Raymond Chandler. And I've read all of his books numerous times. And one of my favorite things to do just when I don't have anything to do on a weekend, maybe I'll drive downtown and I'll pick out a few locations from various Chandler novels, like the Second Street Tunnel and the Bradbury Building and Angel's Flight.
Angel's Flight, plus the Biltmore Hotel, which is the last place that the Black Dahlia was seen alive.
Yeah,
that's right. She left there.
And I love him too. That's
Leonard
James Elroy.
Elroy. Yeah, I love his stuff. If anyone wants a good noir crime novel to read, check out White Jazz.
White Jazz.
One of his best. Yeah.
I don't think I read that one.
Amazing. And Hollywood Nocturnes is another good one.
Yeah, that's great.
And then of course, you know, if you want to really delve deep into the Chandler Philip Marlowe history, go to the corner of Cahuenga and Hollywood, and that intersection is actually known as Raymond Chandler Square. Philip Marlowe had his office in the Cahuenga Building, which is on the northeast corner of that intersection.
And that's the classic glass door where she walked in and she had legs down to there.
Right,
all
right.
That whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, we were doing research for a script we were writing, and we're down in San Diego at a cemetery where the person about whom we were writing is buried. And we're shocked to find this person buried right by Raymond Chandler.
Yeah,
in who's buried in San Diego.
Yep, that's right. He died. He lived and died in San Diego. He was born in Chicago, and he didn't start writing until he was 40s. And right. I am also a Chicago native. Yeah,
look at you.
So we've got some. We've got some kismet there. Me. Yeah. Look
at that. How much time do we have left? I've got one more big question for Chris. Actually,
we've got 5 minutes left.
Okay. As people who watch The Insider probably know, you actually are an attorney.
Yes.
What?
Yes. And
1995, I passed the bar on my first try. Still my biggest accomplishment.
Wow, on the first try.
First try.
And why I say about people who watch The Insider, because he would weigh in on specifically some of the legal matters that, you know, that came up involving the news stories.
And was instantly sued for malpractice.
No. Were you? No. Okay. where you're at now as a host and as an actor, I'm always curious about things like this. How would you say that your background in terms of law school and passing the bar and all that, how has that served you in terms of what you do? I mean, it had to have given you confidence. I mean,
yeah, I mean, definitely confidence. But I think I had those skills even before I went to law school. I think I felt that I could be successful as an attorney if I had to fall back on that because of the skills that I possessed already. You know, I would want to be a trial attorney, which is essentially being an actor too. You know, the judge's got their role, the jury's got their role, the attorneys have their roles. But really, law school for me was just an extension of undergrad. I mean, I just didn't want to jump out into the real world yet. I was still living in my college town and hanging with all my college friends. And so I made it through law school in 2.5 years because I went 2 full summers.
Wow.
So it was just really, and you know, once you get past the first semester of law school, you kind of realize that it's not really that much more difficult than undergrad.
Take that, lawyers. Wow.
And most lawyers would agree with me.
Is that right?
Yeah. Why I wanted to bring
and
this.
What was your specialty?
Well, you have to study everything. I would have gone into criminal law.
Okay.
Yeah.
But why I wanted to bring this up before the show closed was because, you know, we do get emails and questions from people all the time about, you know, I have a son or I have a friend or I have this, you know, who aspires to do this. You know, what should they study? What should they do? You know, and the thing that is cool, it's the scariest thing and that's the hardest thing, I think, about success in show business. But it's also the coolest thing is that there is no single path. There are as many paths to get there as there are people who make the journey.
Yeah,
that's right.
And that can be hard at times because, you know, we want to be told where to go and what to do and what to study. But the truth is, no matter what your background and no matter what skill set you're developing at any given time, you can still end up pursuing your aspirations in terms of entertainment.
Well, the single most important thing in entertainment, especially if you want to be in front of the camera, is self-preservation and perseverance. You have to be willing to hear no 99 times, get up, go to the 100th audition and hear no again and still go to the 101st. Because that's the reality of it. I mean,
my record.
You just have to keep going back and eventually, and I'm a big believer in fate in my career. I've missed out on jobs that I really wanted to get. Had I gotten that job, it would have precluded me from getting a job, you know, that turned out to be great for me. So I give my career to the fates and let it come. And it's been successful and it's taken me to some strange places, some places I never thought I'd been.
Rooftop of the Eastern Columbia.
Look at where I am right now.
You
exactly.
have arrived, my friend.
Only down from here.
Well, I think that's great advice. The only other bit of advice that we can add is if you really want to pursue this as a career path, you know what? You got to listen to every installment of your Chilpack Hollywood Hour.
That's right. That's where you get it.
You can download or stream us at chilpackhollywood.com. Of course, you can subscribe to us on iTunes. You can become a friend of
the show
on MySpace, the abandoned amusement park of the internet. We're still there where you can always hear the most recent installment and where we post a blog previewing the coming week's show. That's myspace.com/chilpackhollywood.
Does MySpace still exist?
We have hundreds of people reading that blog each week.
Oh, nice.
But they must have an aggregate. I don't think they're actually going.
They access MySpace through Facebook.
Yeah.
They do, actually. You can become, there's the mashup. What do you get when you cross Facebook with MySpace? You get Facebook.
Twitter all over my face.
You can be a liker of the show on Facebook at facebook.com CJ.com/ChillPackHollywood. You can follow all three of us on Twitter.
Yeah.
CJ, what's your Twitter
handle?
Why
is like the only option, by the way? Can I be indifferent to something?
Yeah. No.
Like, still acknowledge that I'm, you know,
I'm indifferent.
Yeah, for me, the commitment for like is way too much.
I have disdain for.
All right. Well, that's because you're okay facing those 99 no's, but your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour is the show that likes to say yes.
My Twitter is ChrisJacobs70. ChrisJacobs70. Please follow me. Yes, 70.
You're
the year of my birth.
I'm D. Haglund.
And I'm Phil Lernes.
So easy.
And this has been your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour.
Thank you very much, Chris.
Thanks, CJ. Was it fun?
It's been my pleasure, you guys.
Awesome.
Can I come back next week?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, I'm unavailable.
Well, yeah.
I'm doing a lot.
You're going to be co-hosting by yourself.